Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with David Moore from JF Hillebrand. How are you, David?
Very well, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. Hillebrand, they're quite a big company. You see them all over the place. They are, well, I think the best word is logistics masters, really. What is logistics and what is Hillebrand?
Okay. We are, or JF Hillebrand is the global market leader as a specialist logistics provider to the beverage sector.
Mm-hmm.
That's mainly alcoholic beverages, although we also move non-alcoholic beverages. We've been going since 1844, which maybe explains why you've seen us
everywhere.
we actually quite open in saying that we are basically located wherever alcoholic beverages are produced or consumed.
Mm-hmm.
So we've something like 47 offices.
Yep.
around the world, and with representation in over 80 countries.
Okay.
If you're looking at the business that we're in, I say it's basically providing a solution for transporting internationally alcoholic beverages around the world. But we then also provide and have developed quite a number of sort of added value services on the back of that core competency.
Alcoholic beverages, just to start off with, because yeah. Obviously there's a lot of rules and regulations about shipping booze around effectively. You know, every man in his tax department wants to take a slice of the action. Do you get involved in sort of the not just the logistics, but the tax side of the logistics at all, or anything like that, customs?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we provide is a door-to-door service. So it's kind of a one-stop shop scenario, which covers the transportation elements, but also then covers all the customs and fiscal duty side of things. So we manage the customs documentation on behalf of our customers, and we manage any payment of local taxes and duties on behalf of our customers as well.
Okay, so you do get it from, say, freight on board, or what's...
Yeah, depending on the country of origin and the customer's buying terms. What you typically see within Europe is that most of the buying terms generally are kind of what we would call ex works. Some people would call it in the trade ex winery or ex cellars.
Yep.
But then once you start going into some of the new world origins, the deep sea origins, you know, typically you may be looking at terms of FOB, which would effectively mean that on the wine price, the supplier has included the cost of getting the product to the port and onto the vessel, and then basically the customer, and using ourselves, picks it up from there. But the terms can vary. It's quite an important consideration when a customer is entering, entering the business and negotiating terms of sale or terms of purchase with a supplier, to make sure that you're absolutely clear on what the buying terms are and effectively which party is building what costs into their price to you, effectively.
So
that you've got a clear understanding of, you know, what that wine is actually going to cost you to get it through to, say, the UK or any or the other destination, you know.
Yeah. So do you work with, say, other freight companies? So someone might be responsible for getting it from the cellar door to the boat, and then you're responsible from the boat to the final consumer or something like that.
Yeah.
How does that handoff work? Do you have like integrated systems with other freight companies, or?
It really is a very flexible approach. Depending on what the customer requires, and indeed what other parties, for example, the supplier, what role they might want to take in the transport movement. So, yeah, in an FOB movement, take as an example from, say, somewhere like Chile, we will manage perhaps the booking of the space on a vessel, mm-hmm. and the allocation of equipment, but it could well be that the supplier will actually arrange to pick up the container from a container park, load it at their winery, and then bring it back to the port, and then basically hand it over to ourselves against the vessel booking that we've made for that movement.
And do you own areas in a container port? You know, I'm thinking of the new container port being built down just below Felixstowe at the moment, and areas like that. Do you actually own physical areas where people just drop their container off, or in different countries?
As a company, we tend to be a non-asset owner. So we're really, our expertise is building the relationships, not just with our customers and the suppliers, but also with the network of subcontractors and partners that we work with in actually the physical provision of the transport services. So we'll be working with trailer operators, with container operators, with shipping lines, rail companies, short sea feeder operator. It's a whole mix of parties that we're working with to build an end-to-end solution for our customers. So we're basically providing the link between the customer and those multiple service providers looking after various parts of the movement. We have got our own customs operations in-house, so we're actually linked then in with the local customs authorities, linked into their systems again, so we're basically just keying information in to affect the customs clearance at destination or whatever.
And is it all about freight movement? There's nothing else there? You don't do bonded warehouses or any of that sort of stuff?
Again, we provide some warehousing solutions for our customers. We also operate some of our own warehouses where we do maybe consolidation of multiple part load consignments, yep. trying to optimize the freight cost for the customer, so optimizing the load fill. They're placing in the container.
So if someone's got maybe a third of a container, you would groupage it with other people and fill the container.
There's various facets. So, typically we will be moving, say, full loads for a customer. So they'll take a container load of wine, with using the Chile example. They'll take a container load of wine from Chile through to a destination, say, in the UK. Alternatively, what we're seeing increasingly now is where customers are looking to optimize their stock levels. So they'll perhaps look to consolidate, multiple suppliers, still trying to optimize that freight cost for the transport movement, but then consolidating various suppliers in, say, a consolidation warehouse. And then we move that through. And that consolidation invariably will be done in one of our warehouses.
Yep. So does that mean they're getting smaller shipments but more regular shipments?
It's basically shipping what you need.
Yep.
Rather than, again, trying to get maybe an optimum freight cost, which then means that you're perhaps sitting on more stock than you actually need at destination. And again, it's I think for the trade, it's about being able to be more agile and responsive to, changes in demand and that kind of thing. So that, you see a new opportunity to, say, list a new wine, you don't really want to be having the sort of decision, well, I'd love to take that wine, but I'm still sitting on, say, a load of stock of a wine that I bought previously that I've kind of maybe over-ordered, and I've still got to sell that through to release the capital to be able to launch this new wine. So it's really about coming up with a lean supply chain. So there's the minimum amount of stock sitting in the supply chain that still achieve and delivers at high levels of stock availability.
So it's getting more towards just in time, isn't it?
Really is getting towards kind of just in time and shipping in achieving an optimum freight cost, but reducing your minimum order quantity of a particular wine down to the minimum you can get, which generally is about a pallet. The other facet, if you like, that we offer then is, we talked about, say, doing a customer doing a full load. We talked about a customer doing maybe a consolidated full load of multiple suppliers. But then you've got many smaller customers that perhaps they might only want to order, say, a couple of hundred cases out of Chile, taking that example. And in that case, then we actually have got our own wine-only groupage services where we're actually consolidating those orders from multiple customers into a container, moving it at the optimum cost, and then deconsolidating at destination for those multiple customers.
Yeah.
So each individual customer is getting the benefit of the fact that their consignment is moving in a load that is optimized in terms of load fill and therefore freight cost.
I'm actually going to ask you a difficult question, David. What's the typical cost of shipping a bottle of wine from, say, Chile to England?
Right.
Exceller to the bonded warehouse.
Okay.
I know it's as long as a piece of string, and I'm sure there's options all over this, but I've always worked on a particular price point. I want to see whether I'm miles out or miles in.
If I take a recent example of shipping wine from, say, Australia, looking at, say, an FOB cost, shipping in a kind of 40-foot container, a container load of wine, you're looking at basically roughly about 18 to 20 pence a litre.
Okay, a litre. Okay. So
a litre,
that's for a bottle, isn't it? So maybe a wee bit cheaper if you're using those big bladders. I see you've got we're at the London International Wine Fair at the moment. There's a big container with a massive bladder.
Yes.
Looks like the biggest bag in the box I've ever seen. Looks fantastic.
You could have a real good party with that, couldn't you?
I reckon so.
The Flexi tank that you're talking about that we operate is 24,000 litres of wine. And you're looking there, if you looked at a sort of comparison, you'd be looking at probably around about sort of 13, 14 pence a litre. So you're looking at kind of 18 to 20 pence in bottle, about 13 to 14 pence in Flexi tank. Obviously, the issue, the factor there is that you're paying for a container movement. But in terms of the number of litres, in a flexi tank, you're shipping 24,000 litres.
Yeah.
Whereas in a 40-foot container, you're probably shipping more like about 14,000 litres.
Yeah, so you're getting in a lot of more use of the volume. And shipping isn't really based on weight, is it? It's based on volume.
There is a weight element. If, you know, in a 40-foot container, you are governed by road weight limits. Same with a flexi tank. Obviously, the reason you can get more in is because you're shipping less, obviously, of the other
dry goods like the glass and the
pallets and this kind of thing. So, hence you can you're just basically shipping the liquid.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and you're not paying to transport pallets and glass around the world.
It does make quite a difference, doesn't it? Really, when you think about it, it only sounds like 5 pence, but by the time you've added VAT on top of that, you know, the retailer's margin, you know, all these things that are just adding percentages on top, it really builds up quite quickly, doesn't it?
So yeah, and I think when they start looking at the relative cost of packaging, maybe at origin as against maybe at in market. And then you start factoring in that freight saving. You can understand perhaps why there has been this, you know, gradual trend towards, particularly on the new world wines, shipping more wine around the world in bulk.
Yeah.
And packaging it closer to destination, you know.
What's happened with freight prices? I understood before sort of the big recession or depression or whatever you want to call it these days, the cost of shipping a container was quite expensive, and then it's become quite cheap. And I've heard recently that maybe prices are just starting to edge back up again. Or what's your experience with the pricing?
I would say that if you look at it in real terms, you know, freight costs represent, you know, very good value these days. There really hasn't been much upward movement in freight costs, and you know, the industry is constantly looking at ways to improve efficiency, so you see much larger vessels, a growth in the size of vessels. You can see vessels moving around the world now that can take somewhere in the region of anything up to say 18,000 TEUs. So that's 18,000 containers on one single vessel.
Yeah.
Now, typically on the north-south trade, which are the main wine trades, you know, you're probably looking at vessels that are running at, say, around, you know, 4,000 TEUs, maybe 4,000, maybe 7,000 or 8,000 TEUs. They're not typically the larger vessels, because the larger vessels can't get into, you know, the sort of ports that are typically wine is coming out of.
Oh, okay.
But there is, you know, there's still this sort of trend towards trying to improve efficiency, a more efficient use of fuel, which is obviously quite a significant cost of, you know, running transport around the world is about fuel.
I understand that. What about, do you have any control over where the wine sits in the container? Because, you know, as you go through the equator, it can get quite hot.
Yeah.
And wine is a product that is, you know, sensitive to the element, so to speak. Do you try and control where the container sits in the ship?
That's actually a very good question, because I think that really highlights some of the changes that have taken place in global shipping. Traditionally, people, you know, felt that wine is a heavy cargo. It for stability, it should sit more in the base of the vessel, and therefore it's below the waterline. It's going to be kept at a fairly constant temperature.
Yeah.
That realistically is no longer the case. With modern ship design, you've probably got as many containers ship sitting above the hold as they are sitting below the hold. And, you know, for vessel stability, you will tend to try and balance out the weight, the heavier cargo, the weight, between the top and the bottom of the ship. So it's not a given that wine, being a heavy cargo, will actually ship in the lower parts of the ship. And in actual fact, the lower parts of the ship could be just as subject to heat as they are above the hold.
Oh, okay.
Because you've got issues of, you know, the vessel fuel, which is heated. so that they can use the vessel fuel more effectively.
Because they use quite thick, deep,
it's a very thick
oil.
Yes, it's almost like a solid thing that they have to basically heat to be able to use. So there's a lot of heat around, comes around the vessel fuel tanks. You've also got generally on the north-south trades a lot of reefer, refrigerated containers.
Yep.
Obviously, they're giving up. They will tend to put those in the lower parts of the vessel because they're easier to work with.
Yep.
You know, rather than clambering up ladders, checking on dials above the hold, they will tend to put them down below deck. And obviously, they are, as a refrigerator, they're giving off
heat.
Quite a bit of heat.
Yeah.
Also find with the modern vessels that they tend to be double skinned, again, so that if they do hit anything, they're less likely to sink. And so what you tend to find that also provides some insulation from the otherwise cooling effect of the water. So, you know, these days, I mean, we're very mindful of the issue of temperature. And so we will tend to specify a protected stow environment, but a protected stow could just as easily be above the deck as it is below deck.
It's
generally out away from heat sources, like, for example, direct sunlight, but it could well be above deck, yeah.
Oh, okay. And is there much problems with heat damage?
Well, I mean, I think that it is a challenge for the trade. The whole issue of temperature and its impact on wine aging and wine quality. We've developed some of our own solutions. We call it the Vin Liner, which is basically an insulation liner that basically sits inside of the container between the outer walls of the container. And the actual consignment sitting within the Vin Liner. So mm-hmm. It's almost like a big
insulation
bag, really, that sits inside the container. And that provides a very effective barrier to the sort of rapid temperature fluctuations that you would otherwise see. And it's really those rapid temperature fluctuations across maybe a 24-hour period that are what does the most damage to the wine. Obviously, you don't really want wine to go to to the extremes of temperature.
Yeah.
But the main thing is that you don't want these rapid daily temperature fluctuations.
Yeah.
And so whilst the Vin Liner won't maintain the wine at a stable temperature, to do that, you need to pay for a refrigerated temperature control container, it will reduce the rate of temperature change. And so, you know, it's seen as quite a cost-effective way of trying to manage that whole temperature issue in the movement of wine.
And one last question. What do you think is going to happen in the next 5-10 years? Have you got any idea of what the changes for shipping of wine might be over the next 5-10 years?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Well, we've certainly seen this trend towards shipment in bulk.
Yep.
If we take Australia, for example, in the space of, 5 years, we've gone from bulk wine to the UK representing maybe 20% of the market to now representing 80% of the market.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Don't see that trend necessarily changing a great deal. Other than that, you've got to bear in mind wine is a global market. So Chilean wine is competing with South African wine, it's competing with the European wines. You know, it's not French wine competing against French wine. It's French wine that's competing against, wines from all around the world. It's very much of a global market. You know, really where the trends in wine production and styles are going to come, which is going to determine, I think the changes. What we will see though is, much more emphasis on efficiency within the supply chain.
Yep.
It's such a competitive market now in wine that if you look at the industry, it's very mature and efficient in terms of things like merchandising, new product development, these kind of things. There is still that opportunity, though, in supply chain management. Bearing in mind that if we look at the UK market, it's very much a promotional market. It's managing your forecasting, forecasting your demand more effectively, and basically making sure that you've only got enough the stock that you need.
Yep.
Releasing that money that is otherwise, tied up in stock.
How long does it take to get from the cellar to a warehouse in London?
Well, this is the thing, because if you look at, say, France as an example, your transit time is no more than a week.
Yep.
Your overall lead time typically would be maybe 4 or 5 weeks. So the challenge is to try and reduce that lead time. The main lead time is actually producing the the order for shipment. So, you know, packaging it, preparing all the paperwork, that kind of thing. Maybe even bottling it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, what we're looking at doing with the trade is develop these sort of collaborative solutions where we're sharing information more freely within the supply chain, which enables then suppliers to anticipate the order that their customer's going to place and make, and therefore make sure that the wine is actually ready, produced, for when that customer orders the product. And if you can achieve that, then suddenly you're looking at some pretty dramatic reductions in your lead times, well in excess of 50%.
Okay.
And it's lead time that then determines stock levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
if you can reduce your lead time by 50, 60, 70%, you can understand the dramatic positive impact that will have on the stock levels.
Yeah.
And obviously cash flow, which is a, you know,
key driver,
you know.
Okay then, David. I think we better wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
That's been my pleasure. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Bud.